Several men I recognized from Marcone's organization were lined up next to him, all firing. So were several more men I didn't recognize, but whose clothing and equipment were sufficiently different to make me think they were freelancers, hired for the job. A few more were still pouring through the open gate and into the cavern. The ghouls were hardy as hell, but there's a difference between shrugging off a few rounds from a sidearm and wading through the disciplined hail of assault weapon fire that Marcone's people laid down on them. Had it been one man firing at one ghoul, it might have been different. But it wasn't. There were at least 20 of them shooting into a packed mass, and they kept shooting, even after the targets were thrashing on the ground until their guns were empty. Then they reloaded and returned to firing. Marcone had given his men the instructions I'd advised, and I imagined the guns he had hired on must have been used to facing supernatural threats of this sort as well. Marcone was nothing if not resourceful. Murphy stopped shooting and screamed something at me, but it wasn't until Marcone stepped forward into the peripheral vision of the armed gunman and held up a hand with a closed fist that they stopped firing. For a second, nothing but a high, heavy tone buzzed in my ears, making me deaf to the other sounds in the cavern. The air was full of the sewer stench of wounded ghoul and the sharp scent of burning cordite. A swath of stone floor 10 yards across and 30 deep had just been carpeted in pureed ghoul. The fight was still going on all around us, but the main force of ghouls was concentrating on the hard-pressed vampires. We'd bought ourselves a temporary quiet spot, but it couldn't last.
Harry!
Murphy screamed over the merely horrific cacophony of the slaughter. I gave her a thumbs up. I pushed myself to my feet. Someone gave me a hand up, and I took it gratefully, until I saw that it was Marcone, dressed in his black fatigues, holding a shotgun in his other hand. I jerked my fingers away as if he were more disgusting than the things fighting and dying all around us. His cold green eyes wrinkled at the corners. Dresden, if it's all right with you, I think it would be prudent to retreat back through the gate. That was probably a very smart idea. The gate was 6 feet away from me. We could pull up stakes, hop through, and close it behind us. Gates to the spirit world paid absolutely no attention to trivial things like geography. They obeyed laws of imagination, intention, patterned thought. Even if Cowell was back there, he wouldn't be able to open a gate to the same place as mine, because he didn't think like me, feel like me, or share my intent and purpose. Seeing fallout from the war with the Red Court had convinced me that running when you didn't have to fight was a really great idea. In fact, the Merlin had written a letter to the wardens directing them to do so, rather than lose even more of our dwindling combat resources. If we hung around much longer, no one was getting out of this abattoir. Thomas's sword came down on a thrashing ghoul, and he shouted, with desperation bordering on madness,
"Justine!"
He spun to me.
"Harry, help me!"
Leaving was smart. But my brother wasn't leaving, not without the girl. So I wasn't leaving without her either. Come to think of it, there were a whole lot of people who didn't need to be here. And in point of fact, there were some damned compelling reasons to take them with us when we went. Those reasons didn't make it any less dangerous, and they sure as hell didn't make the idea any less scary, but that didn't stop them from existing. Without Lara's peace initiative, fronted by her puppet father, the White Court would pitch in more heavily with the Reds than they already had. If I didn't get Lara and her puppet out, what was already a grim war with the vampires would quite possibly become an impossible one. That was a damn good reason to stay. But it wasn't the one that kept me there. I saw another ghoul tear into a helpless, unresisting thrall, closed my eyes for a second, and realized that if I did nothing to save as many as I could, I would never leave this cavern. Oh, sure, I might get out alive, but I'd be back here every time I closed my eyes.
Dresden!
Marcone shouted.
I agreed to an extraction, not to a war! A war's all we've got,
I shouted back.
We've got to get Wraith out of this in one piece, or the whole thing was for nothing, and no one pays you off. No one will pay me off if I'm dead either, Marcone said.
I snarled and stepped closer, getting into Marcone's face. Hendricks rolled a half a step toward me and growled. Murphy seized the huge man by one enormous paw, did something that involved his wrist and his index finger, and with a grunt, Hendricks dropped to one knee while Murphy held one of his arms out straight behind him and angled painfully upward.
Take it easy, big guy, she said. Someone might get hurt.
Don't move, Marcone snarled, to his men, not to me. His eyes never wavered from mine.
Yes, Dresden?
I could tell you to do it, or I'd strand you all in the Never Never on the way home, I said quietly. I could tell you to help me, or I'd close the gate, and we'd all die here. I could even tell you to do it, or I'd burn you to ashes where you stand. But I won't tell you that.
Marcone narrowed his eyes. No?
No. Threats won't deter you. We both know that. I can't force you to do anything, and we both know that, too. I jerked my head at the cavern. People are dying, John. Help me save them. God, please help me.
Marcone's head rocked back as if I'd slapped him. After a second, he asked, Who do you think I am, wizard?
Someone who can help them, I said. Maybe the only one.
He stared at me with empty, opaque eyes. And then he said, very quietly, Yes.